Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Coming up very shortly, we will have Brendan Devenny joining us. He's going to run through a look at the sport for the weekend, but also a look back at the sport, should I say, but also tell us what's coming up on his podcast, DL Debate, which is broadcast after the 7 o'clock news last night, but of course is also... where are you sitting? Katie, over here, please. Thank you very much indeed. We have Katie coming into studio now very shortly with some really good news, I think. So stay tuned for that too. And we also have Layla is going to be joining us, Miss Earth. So lots to come on the programme. Right, 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. Or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Do you recognise that song? I don't. Is that the Circle of Life?
It is the Circle of
Life.
Is
it from The Lion King?
It's definitely from The
Lion
King.
One second now, yeah. That's Elton John. All right, okay, that is the Circle of Life because we have our own Katie McGee in studio with us and we are talking about Disney's The Lion King. It's all very exciting. Katie, what's happening? What's going on?
Yes, yes, yes. So, listen, every year this comes to Dublin to, well, not every year, actually. That's probably a vast
what
lie.
What a great start. We're making stuff
up. Yeah, facts that aren't facts.
Where's my no-spin zone? One second here.
Cutting through the spin, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
No, we're not actually creating spin. We're not cutting through it at all. Katie, we have a policy on this program of truth.
Truth, okay. Well,
it comes with a great frequency.
The truth is, it has been at the Borg Gorse Theatre before, and I always wanted to go to this show because it, well, The Lion King is iconic, really, isn't it?
And it's one of those that... transferred well to the stage and just stuck the test of time. It's just huge.
Yeah. Well, it is by Disney's own theatrical productions.
Well, I suppose that doesn't make a difference. Right. So we know the price of accommodation. We know traffic and parts of Dublin now you can't drive through and blah, blah, blah. And often we want to do something, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not that far to Dublin, if the truth be told. But it's so bloody complicated to try and organise everything yourself.
That's it.
And that's where we come in. Here, isn't it? We say, you want to go and see The Lion King? Well, we'll take care of the hassle for you. And you can just sit back and enjoy the ride. So tell us what we're doing then.
So we are going to be going to The Lion King on Thursday, the 26th of October. So it's a while away yet, plenty of time to organise it. So all you have to do is pay a deposit of €100 as per standard with our trips that holds your place. And it includes then your transfers, your overnight stay. This time we're staying in the City North Hotel on a bed and breakfast basis, and includes your ticket to the show. Now, I suppose the thing about it is we will be taking you back into Dublin as well on the Friday for a bit of shopping, lunch, whatever you want to do. So it is like a wee mini break, essentially. Mm-hmm. So excited. Exciting times.
Now, all in. All in. Your ticket, your accommodation and your bus is €219 per person sharing. So if you put the deposit down now, you've got between now and the middle of October to pay the balance of €119. And as you say, it is like a little mini trip, and get the 100 down and then get the rest of it together. And you go in a group, you can go as an individual, or you can go with someone with you. And I think just if anyone wants to try and book a hotel in Dublin, you'll do very well to get €219 for a hotel. So what we're
really
doing is we're bussing you to the capital, we're putting you up, and we're taking you to the Lion King for €219.
Yeah,
I mean that's decent. It's a considerable amount of money, and that's why we're allowing people time to get their to get things together. But it's good. I think it's really, really, really good.
Yeah, and like that, look, we do
€400. It was to stay in Dublin. 2 weekends ago.
Yeah. And listen, we had a look at a good few hotels, you know, as we always do research for these trips to make sure we're getting the best deal. And, like, you know, the same as that, most of them are up on 350, 250, 350 a night, you know, like, for at the moment, like, for that time
not
of year.
Not the four-star City North Dublin Hotel.
Not with Highland Radio.
For all your hotelling needs.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Maybe I should take this more seriously. Okay, let me, I'm going to have to be serious here for a second.
Okay.
So, on the 26th of October,
yes,
we're going to take you to the Lion King. We're going to bus you down. We're going to put you up in a beautiful four-star City North Hotel in Dublin. You get your breakfast included in that, ticket to the show, and there's a bit of time for shopping in Dublin as well. Then we get you all home safely to your car or someone picking you up. Get your deposits into us now of €100, because that reserves your place, and then we'll sort the rest out then at a later date. Numbers wise, we don't need a specific number, but we'll match the demand, will we? So people, would they need to get in early, Katie?
Probably, because we're only taking one coach to this
one. Right,
because
right.
Like tickets will be quite limited to this show, because it is a really, really popular, it's a really popular musical, and every time it comes, it tends to sell out quite quickly. So, so yeah, absolutely. If you can get in sooner rather than later, all the better.
And is there a telephone number you can ring?
It's 074-912-5000.
Okay. Say that again.
074-912-5000.
Yeah, no one's ever said the number that way, ever.
Really?
No.
Well, I like to be the first.
And what other songs are in The Lion King?
Well, there is... Do you know what? Actually, right, and this is not a lie.
Yeah.
The Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
Mm.
That was that, we had that
jungle,
in our
the
wedding.
Mighty Jungle, is that in it?
Yeah, but
let's listen to a bit of that.
I can't remember.
Is that the actual song? Anyway, it's going to be brilliant. All the songs, you know every song. It's one of those shows that you know every song too, and you've got the beautiful stage. As you say, it's Disney-backed, so you know it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
All right, 074-912-5000 is the number if you wish to reserve your place on that. It's for October, so we've got the lovely summer to look forward to, right? But wouldn't it be nice to have something then in October to look forward to? Your hotel, your ticket, your bus, everything, €219 per person sharing. So that is really, really good, I think, anyway. And I mean that genuinely. I'm not just just saying that. Is there something we're flagging for 2024? Are you going to do that? Or what expressions of interest? Or are you not going to say anything?
Do you know what? We have been lucky enough to get tickets for Hamilton as well for October. Oh, God, I might use it October or November.
It's next year. Okay,
it's 2024. But do you know
what?
Some
time away, we'll confirm the dates.
Absolutely, we'll confirm dates and all the details for that later on in the year. But as tickets are extremely hard to get for this show, because this is a massive, massive deal, this musical. So people, like, the tickets are already nearly sold out. So if you want to go to Hamilton in 2024, send your name and your contact number to inquiries@highlandradio.com.
Express an interest.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'll put you on a list so we can contact you closer to the time then.
Okay. So, as I say, 2024, it's a long time away, but if you, Hamilton already nearly sold out, we've secured a number of tickets, but obviously the details have yet to be finalised. So what we're trying to do is get together people who really want to go. We'll put you on a pre-booking list, so to speak. Email your name, put Hamilton in the title so we know what the email's about. Email your name and your number to inquiries@highlandradio.com, and Katie McGee will sort that out. Isn't that right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. For now, 074-912-5000 if you want to book your spot on our trip to the Lion King in October. Everything's included, your ticket, your hotel stay with bed and breakfast. It's a four-star hotel, and your bus down for €219 per person sharing. There's a single supplement applicable, which is the hotel, not us. But be that as it may, it's going to be a great time out on Thursday in October. Thursday, the last one, presumably. Yeah. Anything else you want to add, Katie? Did you enjoy last night?
I did enjoy
last
night.
How much did you enjoy it out of 10?
11.
Yeah, wow, turn it all the way up to 11. Brilliant night, wasn't it?
It was a brilliant night, and everyone involved in organising, which I can't take any credit for, we just did a phenomenal job. Yep. It was really, really good.
Hi, can you congratulate Amanda Friel from the Beauty Suite, Letterkenny, on winning Beauty Therapist of the Year last night from Mum and Dad, a very proud Mum and Dad, I'm sure. Good morning, congratulations to you all for a brilliant award ceremony last night. Please will you send congratulations to all the winners, especially our daughter Lorraine Preston of Light Lerve, who was one of the lucky winners last night. Thank you. And I think if I remember, Lorraine, she was particularly overjoyed, which was lovely
delighted.
To see.
Yeah, yeah.
Eclipse Cinema, Lifford Straban and beautiful Bundoran would like to thank those customers who nominated us for our Family Entertainment Award. Thank you, Fnula, Sean and Joe, for a great night. No business like show business. Excellent.
They I'm sure, were very just to mention,
as well.
You
Go
did
ahead.
A fantastic job.
Yeah,
presenting
thank you.
Your awards.
So there was three of us. There was John, yeah. Lee and me.
Yeah.
So could you put them in an order? The best at the top, descending down to the worst.
Can we be linear about this?
Congratulations to Edward and Samantha Coyle and all the team at Coyles of Rafaux on their award last night. Well deserved. Rafaux did really well last night.
Yeah.
The Butchers won there as well. Their name just escapes me at the moment, but they were delighted to win as well, as was everyone. And when are the pictures coming out? Because I'm really concerned. I thought I was standing a bit awkward in many of them. I'm not a pro like Lee and John. I don't normally do those things. Do we know when the pictures are coming out?
I don't know. I'd say the girls are probably working on that now, just to make sure they get all your best sides and all that kind of thing.
I just see the back of my head from about 100 feet. Yeah, that one, we'll print that one, Greg. All right, and you look fabulous, and everyone did. A quick word on the fashion, both the men and the women last night. Again, it was like, and I mean this 100% complimentary, it was like Ladies' Day at the races or something like that. Everyone really went to town, mostly, anyway, Katie.
Yeah.
But everyone really made an effort, didn't they? Mostly people, Katie.
They did, and I'm going to ignore your... kind of insinuations
you
there.
You look lovely. Go on. But no, they did. It was fantastic.
And you know what? It was really nice because it just showed how much it actually meant to everybody who was there, like that they made that much of an effort.
I just think they should do a best
night.
Dress next year as well, because some of the outfits on show, and as I say, both the guys and the girls looked absolutely fantastic.
There was some real, like, glamorous women there as well, and some lovely, lovely suited men. So, yeah, no, all good.
All right. Listen, Katie, thank you very much indeed.
No problem.
Hopefully the phone's ringing for you there. I'll remind people once again, but for now, thank you very much indeed, Katie. So, listen, if you want to go and see Disney's The Lion King with us in Dublin on Thursday, the 26th of October, it's the award-winning Lion King, the musical, the full show that you'd be familiar with. It's brought to you by Disney's Theatrical Productions. Your trip includes a luxury transfer, overnight stay at the 4-star City North Hotel Dublin. It's on a B&B basis. Your ticket to the show and all of that for €219 per person sharing. Go and try and book a hotel room in Dublin. You'll see you could just get the stay and not go to the show and you'd actually still be doing well. The deposit, €100, books your seat on our one bus that we're taking. So get in as quick as you can. All right, Katie, thanks very much indeed. Let me put the mic up just in case any of your family are listening. Thank you very much indeed, Katie.
Thank you, Greg.
Say hello to anyone while you're here? Any play requests?
For everyone that knows me.
We're just hours away from another DL debate. Hi, Brent.
It's exciting, isn't it, Greg? It's exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's exciting, especially when the sun's out.
Hey, what an award show it looked last night, Greg.
It was really good.
Well done.
It put me in mind too of your fundraiser you did. The Errigal really know how to put on a show and look after everyone. There was over 500 people there, everyone fed and watered all at the same time. Absolutely, really remarkable. So credit where it's due there too, Bren. But as I say, it was reminiscent of the great show you put on.
Do you know what, Greg? There's another one of them coming up, if I can avail of your services and your participation again. It's at the end of the year. It's the last Friday in November out with Terry. The last one, of course, was kind of in the middle of that whole COVID situation.
This is going to be the first proper post-COVID one.
Oh,
I might have to stick the suit into the dishwasher or the dry cleaners or something. I don't know what I'm going to have to do. Right, so that's on again in November.
Yeah, end of
Brilliant.
November. It's a trilogy. It's a trilogy, Greg.
Excellent.
It has to
All right.
three of them. It's got to do with the lifespan of the planned kids that we sponsor, you see, Greg.
Yeah.
So we take them right through their early years, through their education and and making sure that everything's right in the community around, obviously, first and foremost, food to eat and shelter, and then education, and try and give them an opportunity in life. So that's why the three charity balls take care of that. And then, of course, we help other charities as well. We did Focus Ireland Cancer Care West the last time. So because of what happened, my dad and my sister there, Greg, we're going to go with hospice. Dad is his last days in the hospice, of course. Everybody knows the brilliant work they do up there. And we're going to do epilepsy.
Yeah, the line
in Ireland as well, which is something that obviously was part of what happened to my sister when she died.
Yeah, indeed. And the line just froze there. So it's the Hospice and Epilepsy Ireland. But we'll talk much more about that as we get towards the end of November. Right. OK. Your show's packed. This show's packed too. So we'll get straight into it. The Donegal ladies, I think they pulled off a fantastic result yesterday, not just for themselves, but I think the GEA community as a whole. They were going into that game as underdogs, but that didn't hold them back. 1-10 to 9 points against Armagh. Put that into context for us, Ulster champions again.
Greg, absolutely amazing. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like, so I was listening in, keeping an eye on the score, and Armagh were going for four in a row. Now, they beat us in a couple of finals there, which we had a better team than them, everybody, and we controlled the games. They had us with late goals, took titles off as they shouldn't have, but going into this year, Greg, everything has happened to us in the league. And then the early stages of Ulster, you were like, there's no chance of us being able to take this Armagh game. I mean, I was up at the game in Lifford there. Armagh beat us 1-15 to 2-4. Completely outplayed us in the game, Greg. So we were going in there as completely written off. So the fact we were able to pull it together, of course, a couple of our experienced players came back, and particularly Niamh McLaughlin, Niamh Hegarty and Tania Kennedy. Niamh McLaughlin, of course, was player of the match, but I think that wee bit of experience in there, Greg, just bolstered the side enough to stay in the game against an Armagh team, which had completely outplayed us weeks previous. So, I mean, such a game. I'm so delighted for Maxie and his brother Barney's and coaching as well. And that, I mean, they're great lads, a heart and soul, Donegal GAA. They've put so much into it, and so have these young girls now coming through have an Ulster title. So, I mean, brilliant story. Brilliant
Fantastic.
Story. We'll chat to Maxie later.
Right, brilliant. And as you say, the team the team on the pitch and off the tip pitch deserve great credit there. In the football, it was a late goal from Armagh for the men's to kind of an interesting game. I watched most of that. But I suppose, you know, you have to grind them out too, don't you? The points here and there.
Yeah, I suppose people talk about the hangover, Greg, of Armagh. Maybe people will underestimate Westmeath. I think what you're seeing from the weekend there, because all the top teams, as we know, are playing fairly similar. Outside of probably Mayo, are the only team that maybe haven't gone to the level of tactics of the rest. But you know, you look at the teams around the country there, like Paddy Telly going into down to Kerry to sort out their defensive side. Everyone else, you know, you look at our own Mark McHugh's down with Ross Common, you've seen how they were set up, how Derry Monaghan are set up. Everybody's kind of set up the way. And if you look at it, Greg, Derry Monaghan was a draw, Dublin Ross Common was a draw, Armagh won by a point, and even in Louth and Cork, there was only 2 points on it. So, you know, it's getting very competitive because everybody's realising how we got to play. Everyone's shutting down space, coming back in numbers, making it hard to break down, and there's a real commitment to a squeeze and the kick out. So at times, Greg, it's still not pretty to watch, but at least it's fairly competitive. And there was a huge performance of Monaghan. I mean, Derry absolutely hammered him a few weeks previous in OMA and also Championship. So, you know, a lot of teams are getting their act together, and fair play to Westmeath. Nobody thought they could put it up to Armagh, particularly at home. So you have that thing of teams getting their act together, realising what they have to do to be at the very top. And it's going to make for a competitive championship.
Yeah, for sure. And you'll go through it all with John Colum Gillespie. No, sorry, that's another item. You go through it with top GEA pundit Colm Parkinson and Michael McMullen, too, reporter with Gaelic Life. You'll wrap all of that stuff up with them. And I did mention John Colum Gillespie. He's chair of Niamh Mura Club. He'll be joining you, too, as they are hosting the All-Ireland Gaeltacht Championship next weekend, which is a huge event for so many people as well.
Huge, Greg, huge. And if you can get down there, get down there. The Friday weekends of football, of course, TG Carr are covering it as well, showing all the games. You have people coming from all over the country, namely Galway, Mayo, Meath, Cork, Kerry, of course, to come up and battle with their own Donegal team. So yes, the Neave Warwick Club put in a massive effort. The grounds are looking unbelievable down there, Greg. So if this sun keeps going, it would make it all the sweeter.
Oh yeah, next weekend's a cracker again. So it's going to be dry. Yep.
You better get the sun cream, that nice head of yours. Eh?
I'll tell you. I better do something with it anyway, because I've no hair to protect me. Right, okay, so that is a cracking show. It's all live just after 7 p.m. This evening. You can listen to the DL debate. It's in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. A caller says, very disappointed that the ladies' game didn't even get a mention on the Sunday game on RT. I don't watch that programme, but if it didn't, that's crazy. I mean, they shoot themselves in the foot, don't they? I mean, just do 5 minutes on it, for crying out loud.
Right. You're right, Greg. Listen, there's this, just they've no room for anything now. I mean, there's been furore about this, about there's supposed to be a Saturday analysis show, and then they said they were only bringing out, I think it was it six shows or something, and the amount of football they're trying to process, football and hurling, don't forget, Greg, huge weekend of hurling in the country as well. So impossible.
Is there too much waffling?
Well, do you know, I nearly think for the LGFA, they need their own show at times there. There's no point in even... Listen, you could say, oh, stick them in a day in a couple of minutes, but that's disrespectful as well.
Tokenism.
You know, you're really looking there, is there a way we have... I mean, you're looking at GA Go, it's a streaming device. Let's have an analysis show on there. It's not going to cost much to put together. Throw it up, leave it on the site the whole time, let people click into it, and... Listen, we're going to promote, Greg, we often say this, and that's why we always give the ladies and the hurlers and everything, because football, men's football predominantly is overbearing maybe in Donegal, but we've got to promote, you know, everybody's out there doing their best, and that was a huge victory for Donegal yesterday, so it's a pity it didn't get the national spotlight.
Yeah, well, it certainly will get it here anyway. And listen, Brendan, thanks very much indeed. Have a good show this evening. Are you back next Monday? When are you heading on your trip? You're back with me next Monday, are you?
I'm back, yeah. I'm not going it's a wee while yet.
Right, okay. So, well, I want to talk to you a little bit more about that separately, actually, in fact. But anyway, for now, Brent, thanks very much indeed. Brendan Devaney live with the DL debate after 7 o'clock. Maxi Curran's on the show and others reflecting on the Donegal ladies' fantastic victory over Armagh yesterday. So it was sensational. Colin Parkinson and Michael McMullen reviewing the season so far and the weekend's action in the men's game, and also John Colum Gillespie, chair of Neave Murray. They have the honour of hosting the All-Ireland Gaeltacht Championship next weekend. That's going to be covered as well. That and so much more besides with Bren and the team. It's the DL debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, live on air tonight at 7, and it's incredibly popular podcast as well, because it's footballing people talking about football and all Gaelic hurling as well, but you know what I mean. All right, back with our next guest shortly. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Where's my headphones? Here they are. Right, okay. Our Monday focus is staying with defective concrete. We've got Dr. Eileen Doherty. Good morning to you, Eileen. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
No worries. Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you back on the programme. Joe Morgan's with us as well. Hi, Joe.
Morning, Greg.
And last but not least, Professor Paul Dunlop. Paul, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
I suppose before we talk about what we invited you to talk about, maybe some reflection on our conversation a little earlier on with Lisa Hone. You probably weren't privy to it all, but the thrust of it being effectively that, you know, people should really give some firm consideration now to joining the action from Coleman Legal. Now, I will say Coleman Legal will be on the show tomorrow morning to answer all questions, because some people contacted us and said they contacted them today and they say they weren't taking any other people on. But anyway, I'm sure that'll all be clarified tomorrow. But I think, and I understand exactly where MAG are going with this, but it's kind of a sad indictment, Paul, really, of the state of the enhanced scheme, that it might suit some, it's not going to suit the majority, and we're actually looking at alternatives now. I mean, it has to be said, but it's a poor reflection on really the enhanced scheme, as I say.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was listening to I actually listened to the whole conversation, you know, and I think Lisa explained it very clear. I mean, there are some people who might get out of this okay, but not everybody is. And it's quite dismaying to hear someone calling and thinking, having our local politicians done a great job on this and delivered what they said. It's clearly not. And I think Lisa highlighted the issues of people who are following the details of this, it's clearly the case that people are being left out of this, and it's they have not delivered a 100% redress scheme. And, you know, obviously she was talking about the details of the Coleman legal thing. So if people are going to be left with a shortfall, which clearly is going to happen for the majority of homeowners, well, why wouldn't you join a multi-party action where your costs are being paid for? And a High Court judge has clarified a few weeks ago in the last hearing that actually, if the case is lost, no one's going to be coming after you for your costs. So nothing to join, no cost if you lose. It's an absolute no-brainer from what I see. I mean, ultimately, no one wanted to go and join a legal case. We just wanted the government to do the right thing, and I think they haven't done that.
Eileen, you concur.
Yeah, I was just going to comment, actually, and I think it might be worth going back to 2021. Myself and Joe, for example, were on the working group in conjunction with the government. We lobbied over the course of that whole summer, and we submitted a very detailed submission around the problems we found with the 90-10 scheme. We, at that point, at the end of that summer, when they came back with the review and the report, realised at that point, Greg, that really the government were ignoring a huge amount of absolutely critical aspects and problems that were associated with the old scheme. And I think that's where we decided to go ahead. And Joe has led the way in terms of taking this to Europe. Mm. And I think it's really underpins, really, it highlights really why we have decided to go on this trajectory, because we lost an awful lot of confidence. We spent a huge amount of time that summer going through it in absolute detail. And really, we were tasked with something which was unfair. We're homeowners at the end of the day. We are campaigners. So I think that that really underpins and highlights exactly why we're going to Europe this week.
And I'm going to bring Joe in on that in a moment, but just staying with you for a second now, Eileen. I mean, you, like a number of others, have been through this whole process, and we've arrived where we've mm-hmm. arrived now. And I'll put the same question to you that I did to Lisa. Why? Why? It seems so much in the government's interest to properly fund this, to make it a proper scheme. As I say, it might not even be their responsibility after the next election. It's going to be multi-year. It's going to be multi-billion. Why? What is the motivation then for putting in these roadblocks? It doesn't make any sense. I'm struggling. Is it because they're peed off with you guys and they don't want to be seen to be browbeating into something? I don't know. Have you any understanding of it, Eileen?
To be honest with you, we're perplexed too. I mean, again, going back to the submission we made, in 2021, you know, we really felt that a lot of the solutions that were being put forward by us as a team were actually very sensible. And they actually, in the end, want to save money. This is what a lot of families who are going through this, you know, the fact that the government has ignored this for so long, in the end, is going to cost the taxpayer more money. And let's remember, we're not just Donegal anymore. We're not just Mayo. We are potentially 13 counties and 26. You know, this is a national issue now, Greg. Why are they not listening to common sense? Honestly, can't tell you why. I think ultimately we would have to say that it's probably just the cost. This is going to cost so much money. I think that the fact they took their eye off the ball, they did not provide governance and oversight at a time when they should have. I think there's an element of they just don't want to accept responsibility. That's the only thing I can come up with, because certainly it does not make sense that they don't involve the key stakeholders. We asked to be involved in the 90-10 scheme and helping to contribute. They ignored us at that time. They gave us a nod this time, but really, they really didn't even listen to anything sensible from us this time either. So I think that's why we just feel as if we have absolutely no choice. Families need to be given justice. I mean, I read the article from Noel Nunes' family yesterday in the Business Post about the banks. That experience is coming through to so many of us, that families are just not even being supported by the banks. This is a disaster in terms of government really leading the way and showing sort of good leadership, I suppose, in trying to help families. And I think we just ultimately have to be heard in Europe.
Yeah, and that's thanks, Eileen. You're a pro. This leading me straight on to exactly where I was going to go. But Joe, I want to go to you. But Paul, you just wanted to add something there, and then we'll focus on the European element of it.
Just about the finance of all this. You know, I mean, we have been vilified as campaigners for the last number of years about how this is going to cost the taxpayer and things like that. And Leo Varadkar, when he was Taoiseach, was saying that. The different sort of finance ministers were saying the same thing. And it has not been lost on people who are suffering this crisis about the sort of the government now sort of coming out spouting how much they've got in reserves, 5 billion this year, 20 billion this year. So it's not to say that they didn't have the money to do this. They had, they just didn't want to fix it.
And let's be very clear, there was a very active battle for the minds of the public. There was comments that were made that were very structured in how they were made in the timing. You'll remember the mansions.
Yes.
And you'll remember about how people should be happy with what they've got. We remember that it's put out there effectively by the housing minister that this problem is fixed. And he's asked questions saying, you've sorted Donegal out now. And he's nodding going, yes, we have. So there is a battle for the hearts and minds of the people. And if there are people in this country against a 100%, it's not thoughts that they've conjured themselves. It is what they've been told and listened to by elected politicians on the government side. And that's a statement of fact. It's not, again, in case anyone's listening, anti-government. It's simply a statement of fact. I'll come back to both Eileen and Paul. But Joe, just talk us through this European journey here. And I suppose from the outset, let me ask Joe, might this deliver something for homeowners? Because I'm conscious people will be listening, and we heard from Lisa earlier, and it's not exactly what we want to hear. And I just want to find out what the European journey will be about. Is it potentially about getting houses restored as they should be? Or is this more about accountability and oversight and regulation and stuff? I'll let you explain that to us, Joe, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's a very educated question, Greg. So in terms of the journey, first off, and then I'll get to what we hope to achieve or may achieve. So the journey with Europe actually started back in October 2021, I believe, the date when we were in Dublin, right, marching in our thousands. And MEP Lookming Flanagan approached Eileen, who's on the call here with us, and Anne Owens, and they just had a conversation by the scissor lift that we had outside the custom house there. And he just offered help, right? That was pretty much the gist of the conversation. He was like, right, I want to see what I can do to help. Now, what happened subsequent to that, a few months later, myself, Eileen, and a few others, representatives from Donegal and Mayo, went to the EU petitions, and we presented to them. Now, a couple of things have happened since then, Greg. That's a year and a half ago, right? So I appreciate time has elapsed. We've been knocking on the door, and we've been maintaining engagement with Luke and his team, particularly Emma Sheeran, who's been amazing in terms of just getting the support and keeping those corridor conversations within the EU Parliament going, right? So two things have happened as a result of that. One is we have the Petty Committee themselves coming over later this year, and they're going to conduct what they call a mission in their own terminology. Now, that's very important too, because what it'll allow us to do is to get the reality of the situation on the ground here in Donegal in front of MEP legislators, right, within the EU Parliament. What the meeting is later this week, it's an escalation of that entire journey. So we've gone beyond the EU Parliament at this point, and we're speaking to two very senior civil servants within DG Grow, which is a division within the EU Commission, which looks after industry and its remit, particularly interested in regulation, etc. So we're meeting with a deputy head of that division and one of their engineers. So we'll have legal and scientific expertise in the room with us, right? The key objective of that visit, Greg, is simple. It's to get the EU Commission to infringe our government for lack of regulation of quarries, of the construction industry, and particularly lack of assessment of quarries. That's the primary goal. And just to put a little bit of specific on the meeting, the reason they've agreed at this particular point in time to meet with us is specifically off the back of the scientific publication that Paul Dunlop, who's with us, and Andreas Lehmann put together earlier this year. That has sparked an interest in them, right? Because there's scientific fact in that publication, and we can tie that to the fact that we have a lack of, if not absentee, regulation in this country when it comes to construction. And if you look very specifically to the very recent comments only last week by the head of the new National Building Control Office in this country, responsible for assessing quarries, and a recent email that the Business Post reported on, speaks to regulation in this country as a national emergency. And I think that tells you where we're at in terms of the state of the regulation of construction in this country today.
So is it a case, really, that we would hope be either enforcement or embarrassment that there is proper regulation, that something like this cannot or could not be able to occur again? And if it did, those who were supposed to make sure it didn't happen could actually be held to account? Or do you believe, Joe, there's a retrospective element to this which might be some sort of a pathway for those that are affected? And when I, not just homeowners, you know, the holiday homeowners, people from the north, people with agricultural buildings, community centres, do you know what I mean? That maybe this could bring them into the equation a bit more.
Yeah, there absolutely is, Greg. So on the first objective in terms of the EU Commission insisting on quarry assessment here in Ireland, right, I'm told and I'm led to believe from people that should know, right, legislators within the EU, that the EU Commission themselves can engage with the European Court of Justice and enact infringement proceedings against the Irish government. So what we're doing ourselves is not in and of itself a legal action. So therefore, you know, there are legal actions happening. We're not currently involved in a legal action. We're involved in a political lobbying exercise to get the EU Commission to engage their own judicial framework to infringe our government. Now, that will, if we're successful, right, and like all of these threads of this campaign, we're not guaranteed, but we will keep trying because there's a chance that we can be. That will lead to, we hope, a very comprehensive protocol that will allow our children, and I spoke to the fact that we don't want our children back in the EU courts in 15, 20 years' time when it was presenting to Petty. It will ensure that they will be covered and that they can have peace of mind when they're buying construction products and building their own homes. But to your second point, and this won't, to be clear, happen next week, but if we're successful in that route, right, there is then a pivot that we can make into human rights regulation, which I am already flagging to the EU Commission, right? But there's a whole suite of human rights regulation which speaks to the right of the EU citizen. And just one, and it's not technical. It simply states that if you have had damage as a result of the administrators within an EU member state government or their bodies, if you have had damage, well, you have a right for the state to make those damages good. Now, that potentially would allow us then to engage the EU Commission again to look at what the government are proposing to help us fix our homes. Now, that's us who are impacted today as opposed to our children in 15 to 20 years' time, which is what we're going after first.
Yeah, what strikes me about this, Eileen, too, is that in their defence, if it were to happen in this sort of a way, the government could point to other issues where they actually wouldn't have contravened legislation, in that how they responded to the issue with apartment blocks down in Dublin. They'd probably get applause from the EU to some extent in relation to that. But it would be interesting to hear an explanation as to why different groups of people in this country have been treated differently and why. I mean, I think it would be, I can ask that question, right? But they'll run around the answer. You couldn't pin them to ask that question. If you did, you'd probably get into trouble for it. Do you know what I mean? But I think it would be nice where there is a platform where it's actually explained as to why some people in this country are being treated differently to others.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been saying that for quite a while, as you know, Greg, that, I mean, the disparity of treatment is actually quite stark. And I think the other thing that we'll be bringing up, which is kind of related to that, is just the whole idea around Pyrite. Obviously, Pyrite, they came in and they provided 100% pretty much redress for those people affected. But one of the things we'll be presenting is, even following Pyrite and their own recommendations, you know, they didn't even implement their own recommendations. They spent a lot of money putting together a report and saying, if this ever to happen again, here's what needs to happen. So we're going to pull out a few of those recommendations that relate to market surveillance, even just a very few of them, to say to the EU, look, here are a few that relate to how they said in 2012 they would survey the market, they would make sure this would never happen again, and none of it happened. So they have themselves on record in a published government report, and they haven't even done that. So, I mean, it's just beggars belief sometimes. The more you dig, the more you realise that this has been just managed abysmally. I mean, the banking thing, as I say, that's come up in the last few days, it's just hard to believe. I mean, I saw a post from somebody yesterday in the Business Post, and she said, like, you know, they've had 10 years to sort this out. How many years have we been saying, please speak to the banks, get the banks to support us? Every person I'm speaking to has not been supported by the banks. Personally, I went, and I'm just being honest, I went myself to the bank, I went fine until I got to Dublin. And then when the Dublin representatives from the Bank of Ireland, and I'll call them out, They came back and said, what does she need a grant, a loan for? Aren't you getting 100% redress? Yeah, that's what happened.
And that's also part of the narrative, the control of the narrative out there. And listen, thankfully no one lost their lives, but there was a fire, relatively small fire, an apartment block in Dublin yesterday, and we had analysis the next day. A minister straight on to Morning Ireland to say, we'll do this, we'll do that. Full of, knew all the numbers, knew what the damage was, knew what needs to be investigated, mm-hmm. knew, you know, instantly like that there. And yet we have a problem like this that is affecting thousands and thousands of people. And I can't even get a minister to come on this programme to discuss it. Paul, what's the story with the science? Is there any progress in that regard? I see you with your protective eyewear and lots of other stuff that I simply can't understand, but I'm sure you're doing something very productive and proactive. What is the story there, Paul?
Yeah. So last year, the Geological Survey of Ireland issued a research call for research into this defective concrete issue. So as of a few weeks ago, we were issued a contract. So the contract's been given to Ulster University, but the research partners were all those universities organisations that were at the conference in November. So it's University of Connecticut, it's Laval University, it's Nick Scaglione from Concrete Research and Testing, and it's also Andreas Lehmann's group at EMPA in Switzerland. So we've been given a €500,000 grant, a research grant. They actually look at the nuts and bolts of what's actually happening within concrete blocks. So the tweets that I was putting out a few weeks ago was that I was over there in EMPA, and it's near Zurich, it's a place called Dubendorf, and we basically spent days cutting concrete blocks into small cubes and getting them ready for analysis.
Yeah.
And when I mean analysis, this is analysis that's going above and beyond IS-465. This is research-grade university and research, federal research laboratory grade research. So this is high-end, high-cutting at the forefront of science analysis. So I'd say within the next sort of 7 to 8 months, we should have a fair idea what's going on in the concrete.
It's a funny one here. And as I say, this is not a criticism, but this is like a 100-metre race. And, you know, you've got science in lane one, you've got homeowners in lane two, you've got Europe in lane three, and the government's in lane four. And everyone's like 50 metres into the race, and the government's still on the starting blocks. Everything is progressing to a point where you think at some point that they're going to have to come through with this. We should be leading the way as a state in terms of science and say, we're going to show the rest of the world how you can prevent this problem happening. But instead, it's having to be done elsewhere. So, Joe, give us a time. You have done very well in that, but just to break it down once more as into how things might progress from a European perspective, just recap the meetings and when we might sort of start get some sort of sense from them or what have you, just for the listener, Joe.
Okay, so I mean, the most imminent milestone we have is Thursday this week. So myself, Eileen, Paul, and Lisa, who you spoke to earlier in the program, we're heading to Brussels. We're going to meet with the two members of the EU Commission directly and have that meeting. Difficult to say timelines after that, Greg. As you know, the circles of politics don't go too fast, but I expect they will take time to one, digest predominantly the science that Paul will present. I'll be speaking to a number of observations, if you like, since January 2020 in terms of ongoing lack of assessment of quarries, and then Eileen's going to cover some historic failings relative to opportunities, I guess, since that have been learned since the pirate scandal in Leinster, right? So that's that meeting, and we'll have to, I guess, hold fire in terms of what will come after that. But we'd hope to be getting some feedback relative to is there a next step and do, have we put a strong enough case together? Or indeed, do we have to go back and put a additional detail together? Mm-hmm. Because as Paul has just mentioned, the science continues and, you know, there may be some findings from that maybe need the feedback for decisions to be made. So that's that one.
It's a process.
And then go ahead.
It's a process. Go ahead. Then subsequent to that,
process. Yeah, and then on the other parallel item, which is equally important, and I think if, you know, when the Petty Committee come to Donegal, I'm told that's going to be in and around Halloween, so it'll be late October or early November as a target. That's going to be an event locally in Letterkenny, but we'll hope to get the MEPs out to houses in both Letterkenny and in Inishowen. And again, the outcome of that particular visit, Greg, there is a very formal process that the Petty Committee have to follow. They go through a very extensive reporting off the back of that. And that reporting output goes to the EU Commission. So what we're hoping is that we will, by the end of the year, have a perfect storm in terms of the output from the meeting we're having directly with the EU Commission this week, and also that formal reporting which will come out of the Petty Committee towards the end of the year to the EU Commission. And that would then, I guess, I'm speculating somewhat, but into the first quarter, maybe next year, we would start to see if we have some legs relative to EU Commission getting directly involved.
Like, crazy, isn't it? I mean, you should be mowing your lawn and planting your window boxes.
Yeah. You would think.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do you ever think on that? Like, you know, that this is, you have all been dragged into this, and Joe's talking there like a bureaucrat.
in a positive way,
but as I say, you should be more worried about getting the gazebo up and firing the barbecue up. And here we are getting into the minutiae of EU legislation. And I mean, Paul would be sciencing away, of course, but you know what I mean. Right. Anything you just want to add? Just we'll wrap it up now. We'll return to this, of course, Eileen.
Can I just make one point?
Yes,
just
go ahead, Joe, please.
Because I know you want to come in. Greg, myself and Paul and Eileen and everybody else that's campaigning, we don't want to be doing this.
No,
we
that's
want
what
to
point
be
I was making.
Lives and spending our time
with
our families. But the unfortunate truth is, you know, the government have had years, almost a century, to listen to facts and figures that have been presented by homeowners. And they're not listening. And they continue to put, as you called it, blockers in place. I mean, that most recent update to regulations whereby there was going to be a building control report required up front to an application, another blocker to stop families and potentially add additional costs to them to get onto the revised scheme. It's crazy stuff. So, you know, we have to do what we're doing. And, you know, we're not the only ones. There are multiple threads, as you pointed out as well, all with value. And if any of those various different threads can do anything to mandate our government to do the right thing by the people, well then they're all worthwhile.
All right, Joe, thanks very much. Did you add something, Paul, or Eileen, whichever?
Just quickly, and so in terms of the science end of things, you know, we brought that delegation across to here in November, and everyone saw for their eyes. I mean, everyone was impressed by the conference and listened to the homeowners, but the second day, visiting people's homes falling apart and dealing with people on the ground, that science team realised that the need for a scientific understanding to try and push the government into a scheme that's based on scientific answers. So we're fully committed to doing that. And now we've got a contract from GSI to deliver the research.
That's a huge, huge advance. Yeah.
Because ultimately, without the actual science, like for example, so the paper that we published, that can't be ignored anymore. Before that paper, there was nothing published at all in this crisis, so people could say what they wanted. So the science is actually key to delivering what's going on. There could be multiple things going on with the concrete products. So this project gives us a chance to do that. So post this project delivery, I think there should be barely no real ambiguity about what's going on in the concrete. And that pushes them into a situation where they have to provide science-led solutions for people. So we're fully committed to doing that in this project.
All right. Listen, brilliant. Keep up the great work. Thanks very much, Professor Paul Dunlop. Dr. Eileen Doherty, last word to you.
Yeah, I just wanted, you just touched on it earlier, Greg, yourself, when you talked about the different types of people who've been affected. So we all know about the homeowners, which make up the majority of those people who are affected by this issue, but we can't forget about people like who, you know, have holiday homes in the county, and also importantly businesses and farmers and people like that. So just wanted to just make a note that we are very cognizant of that. And actually, I've been given funding to the University of Ulster by actually Donegal County Council themselves, which I applied to a few months ago, to examine the impact of this on businesses. So that's an important kind of trajectory as well. We're going down that road. And actually myself and Paul have been given funding to go to Canada to speak about their experience, the businesses' experience in September. So I just wanted to let you know that that is stuff that we're working on in the background as well, for, as part of our roles in Ulster. And we certainly haven't forgotten about that, but there's just so many things that we're trying to deal with.
I get you. Listen, thanks for helping us be across it all. Thank you very much, Eileen. Lovely day. Take care of yourself. Dr. Eileen Doherty here. Okay, Miss Earth Ireland is joining us next. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Leila Doherty. Davey, good morning to you. Congratulations, Miss Earth Ireland. How are you?
Hey, Greg. How are you? Thank you.
And I love the headwear. For those of you you're getting your neck workout. Listen, congratulations. And one thing I'll say before we get into it. so many people wishing you well and so proud of your achievement. You know, that comes in now and again, but we've had tons and tons of people so proud of you. You must be hugely popular anyway. I've no doubt about that, Leila, but everyone's delighted for you.
Thank you. I still don't think it's kind of hit me yet, you know.
Yeah, I'd say so. So you've got the title, you've got the crown, you've got the sash, and you've got a trip to the Miss Earth final in Vietnam. Do you have to pinch yourself?
I do, definitely. I'm going in November for a whole month, and I'm also going to Barcelona, I think, for a week as well as part of my prize.
Wow, that's brilliant. Now, Miss Earth Ireland, it's every year. It's environmentally themed beauty pageant. Tell us a little bit about that side of it.
So most pageants have their like type of platform or something that they advocate for, and Miss Earth Ireland's is environmentalism and conservation. So when I was kind of asked about environmentalism, I didn't think on, you know, the basic type of stuff. I kind of went more down the route of mica and also reusing housing materials, which I think made my advocacy very unique in the run-up to the pageant.
Yeah, and it ties in with much of the conversation we've had today. Did you think they would get the message? Because it's kind of specific and has to be articulated well, doesn't it, Leila?
So whenever I actually went into the interview, I was asked about my advocacy and about the things that I do for the environment. And I think that the judges kind of had heard of it, but didn't actually know the full extent of what it was. So I was able to explain that to them. And I think they went on and they seen some photos from the 100% redress group. So it was really, really great to get the word out there and to give it kind of more something positive to come out of it.
Yeah, but it's still an amazing platform for us to be discussing this issue in again, isn't it? Like, it's a bit alternative and you wouldn't expect it, but wow, you know, it's great.
Thank you. I wasn't expecting to win because the caliber of girls this year was absolutely amazing. It was anyone's game. It was right down to the final minute.
Can you wish Leila congratulations on her win and best of luck in Vietnam from her uncle Brendan, Susan, Keelan and Lorcan here in Mindoran, Clonmany. Very proud of her. Brendan Diver, can you wish Leila best of luck? Congratulations for Uncle Brendan. He's got two in there. I've actually doubled up. I've others coming in. I'll get to them if I don't get them out today, I will into the future. Did you enjoy the whole experience, Leila?
Oh, I loved it. I really, really loved it. The show was so well run by the two directors, Alan and Dennis. They put on such a fantastic show and we had such amazing audience there. And it was so prestigious to have it at the G Hotel in Galway, which was absolutely fabulous.
Wow. Okay. Well, listen, congratulations. Look forward to following your journey. And as I say, you're a hugely popular winner on a really important topic. And I just think it's really great that you were able to articulate that to the judges and they took it on board. And we'll talk to you before you head to Vietnam.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for having me.
The closest I ever got to Vietnam was an episode of Top Gear, but it looked fantastic. You're going to get much closer than that.
I'll get there.
Thank you so very much indeed. All right. We're really proud of you. Thank you very much indeed. All right. That is Leila Doherty there. And Miss Earth Ireland. Isn't that wonderful? Right. We'd like to thank all our customers for nominating us for the Auto Parts Award last night. It's very much appreciated. Also, thanks to Highland for a great night out and the Mount Errigal for a fabulous meal. From everyone at One Stop Motors. Well done to Callaghan Electrical. Well deserved. Hi, Greg. Will be a list of winners from last night. Yes, indeed. They're on our socials, but we'll definitely get something put together there. Well done to all at Floorit on winning last night from Mum, Dad and all the family. Great. There was a great sense of pride and celebration and it was wonderful. Right. OK, we're already preparing our show for tomorrow. We have Coleman Legal on talking about if they're taking on and how they're taking on new clients and any questions you have, get them into us. We'll ask them tomorrow. That and so much more besides. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced. John Breslin is coming up after the news with Donal at 12. Have a lovely day, everyone.